And now he moves to begin his answer to their question. And the first point he makes to them, because they're asking him in this letter, is he alerts them to the danger of causing scandal by eating in the temple precincts. You know very well Jesus' statement. Luke chapter 17, verse 1 is one place to find it, and I like to quote Luke rather than Matthew or Mark because Luke and Paul were so closely aligned. Here's Luke's account. Jesus said to his disciples, "Occasions for stumbling." Well, that's their translation of scandalon. Scandalon was in a race, they would have obstacles, an obstacle race. An obstacle is a scandalon. So something that people can trip over or find it hard to get around. Well, yeah, there'll be occasions for causing people to stumble. They're bound to come, but woe to anyone by whom they come, said Jesus. It'd be better for you if a millstone were hung round your neck and you were thrown into the sea than for you to cause one of these little ones to stumble. If you cause scandal, that is, your behaviour, my behaviour, is such as to make someone scandalize, stumble in their own life, commit sin, lose touch with the church, whatever they might do through my behavior. Well, that's scandal, or yours. So that's Paul's first point that he makes for them to look at. I'll read you the whole thing here. Since some have become, verse 7, so accustomed to idols until now, they still think of the food they eat as food offered to an idol. He's not agreeing with them. He actually agrees with the people who've written the letter. But he's saying, hang on, be careful. There are some people in your community who may well still think in that simple, perhaps superstitious way. So be sensitive to them. Here's the word here. Their conscience, their estimation, don't think of conscious, I won't go into our word of conscience, their consciousness, their awareness, being weak, is defiled. They think it's wrong. And if they think it's wrong and they do it, it is wrong. So be very careful for them. Food, he goes on to say, food will not bring us close to God. The New Jerusalem Bible suggests that that's a quote from the letter. I see no reason for that. I think it's Paul's statement. Food won't bring us close to God. He's already said circumcision doesn't matter. Uncircumcision doesn't matter. Whether you eat a lot or eat a little, these are not relevant matters. That's not how you get close to God. We're no worse off if we do not eat, and we're no better off if we do, as far as communion with God is concerned. But take care that this, I know why, but our translation says, this liberty of yours. It's not liberty. The Greek is exousia. They will translate it in a few verses' time as rights. This insistence on your rights. See, I'm one of the ones, let's say, that has knowledge, and I say, no, there's no real gods. I've got a right to eat. If I want to eat, and I go ahead. But it actually, I might be a leader in the community, and it might cause other people. I'm insisting on my rights. I'm saying it's right, true, but I'm not sensitive to the conscience of those around me. So this, take care that this insistence on your rights, is what I would call it, doesn't somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For, he says, and now he uses the singular, which is so rare, I tell you each time, you in the Greek here is always plural, the community. Sometimes he makes it singular. And whenever he does, you're back in the schoolroom. It's a technique where the teacher says, hey, you, so that each one will hear the se, not humes, but se, you, and we'll all think for ourselves. So he's alerting us all. He's saying, if others see you, who possess knowledge, eating in the temple of an idol, might not they, since their conscience is weak, be encouraged to the point of eating food sacrificed to idols? So that by your knowledge, these weak believers, now perhaps he's quoting them there, that may be their word for them, for whom Christ died, are destroyed. They go back into idolatry. they get caught back in their old habits because they're not that strong, and they drift away, and they lose faith in Jesus, lose communion with the Christian community, and go back to the way they were before, which is going nowhere and leading a dissolute or broken or meaningless life. Because you've gone ahead and they thought, oh, it's all right for him, but they have gone into it without your knowledge. The scholars tell me, and it's pretty hard to sort this out, but I think this is the only time, normally, I've got it here, this is a beautiful statement, these weak believers for whom Christ died. That's the key. But normally when he says, there's an example here, I haven't got it there, the text for you. Yes, I have, Romans 14:15 here. Normally when Paul says, and in that case he uses exactly the same thing, for whom Christ died, he uses the Greek hyper as his preposition, indicating those who benefit from Jesus' death, those for whom he died, those who reap the fruit of it. By using dear, so they have, but I haven't tracked this completely down yet, they suggest that this is the only time he ever uses dear here, for whom Christ died, and it's really giving the motivation of Jesus. He died, this was why he died. Not only, both are true, not only are people benefiting from his death, but he actually did it to give them life, which we know is true. But here he says it. But when you sin against members of your family, Christian family, and wound their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Now, you don't have to eat meat in idols, neither do I, but I hope you can, surely you can see there's a lot of relevance in here. And it comes from Paul's experience on the road to Damascus, probably. Remember what he said? He said, "Who are you, Lord?" And the answer was, "I am Jesus, and you are persecuting me." He was persecuting people. He's persecuting Jesus in doing it. So if I, through my pride or thoughtlessness, do something that hurts your conscience and entices you to take risks beyond what you know and get yourself caught up into problems that I'm not having, maybe because I've thought it all through. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'd have to be doing this at times, because when you're a teacher, you know, it's a dangerous thing to be, because you're saying things from where you are and you're not always picked up well, and okay, I'm not going to be scrupulous about it, but I think I'm not the only one that's in danger of doing this. I think we all can be insensitive like this. He's making a beautiful point. Christ died for this person that you're pushing around, and you're hurting, you're sinning against Christ if you sin against one of the disciples. Before I move on, I just make a point that could interest you if you thought of it. Paul makes no reference to the decision of the Jerusalem Assembly, which you can find in Acts chapter 15, which required Gentile Christians to follow their Jewish brothers and sisters by abstaining from what has been sacrificed to idols. Exactly this situation. The rule's there. Perhaps, this is my suggestion to you, perhaps Paul judged that while this may have been appropriate in communities in which the majority of Christians were Jews, a different pastoral solution had to be found for Corinth. I think that's the case. You do know about the Council of Jerusalem. You remember they made that decision and they sent it back to Antioch, which was a community founded from Jerusalem. Okay, that decision you'll find there about not eating food sacrificed to idols, they made it precisely because the Torah has that command and addresses the command not only to Jews but to Gentiles living in the land for social coherence. So all Gentiles living in the land, in where the Jews were, knew about this, so surely Gentile converts to Christianity could also comply with this command. That's true, and Paul, when he went around to the Jewish Gentile communities in southern Galatia, also spread this truth around. But by the time he got over to Corinth, it would seem the vast majority in Macedonia are Gentiles. So you can't have the same pastoral solution there. They haven't read the Torah, a lot of them. And as they got more and more Gentile, it became less and less relevant to them. So it's quite clear that Paul doesn't solve this problem by quoting the Council of Jerusalem. He doesn't solve it by quoting Leviticus. He's coming at it in a pastorally realistic way in a different situation. Now he moves to quite a lovely section where he, that's his first argument, be careful that you don't hurt fellow Christians who haven't got your knowledge or whose conscience is more sensitive. Be very sensitive to them because Christ died for them, and if you hurt them, you're hurting him. That's pretty good, isn't it? Right. Now he comes to a second argument. So it's quite a powerful one. He now talks about the rights that he, Paul, has, but has chosen not to exercise. Just because you've got a right doesn't mean you have to stand on it and insist on it and carry it through. Love is more basic. So he'll now talk about, because they remember him, he lived with him for 18 months, he'll talk about the rights that he has, which he has let go for love. And haven't we all? Am I not free? They're claiming to be free. Well, they remember Paul. Did you find me unfree? Says Paul. He was pretty free. He's free from Pharisaism. He was free from the law. He was obviously a very free man. So, okay, I know what you mean by being free. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? That's a big word. Sent by the risen Christ to preach to you. Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? And he'll talk about that in chapter 15, which we'll do in a couple of weeks' time, God willing. And in the Galatians, you know, he says about the revelation that he had from God of Jesus. So, have I not seen the Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? Didn't I found the community? Weren't we there together? Didn't you watch me and live with me? Don't you remember that? If I'm not an apostle to others, at least I am an apostle to you, he says. You're not the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. You remember that. There may be others that I didn't found, but not you in Corinth. This is my defense, he says. My apologia to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to our food and drink? Right, exousia, the same word they translated liberty earlier. Right is a better word. Do we not have the right to food and drink? But we're going to go on to see that he never asked for it. He worked for it. He worked hours in the sun doing his needlework. So he gave that up for them. Do we not have the right to be accompanied by a believing wife? Goes back to last week's subject. Paul is celibate. That's very unusual. As do the other apostles. Good little line there to give us some people, I suppose, because clericalism has been around for so long, people kind of think it's always been like that. So I don't know what I learned at school, but I bet the idea is around that when Peter became an apostle, he left his wife. Well, it doesn't seem to have. Do we not have the right to be accompanied by a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers, plural, of the Lord? That's an interesting little historical point too. We know of one brother of the Lord, don't we? James, who's got a high position in the Jerusalem church. Obviously others too were there. And we know from history, Simeon, Jude, they'll take on after some of the names that we find in the gospel. Okay, and Cephas, that's Peter. So obviously the norm is for the apostles to have their wives with them, as you'd expect. But Paul hasn't, but he could have, but he didn't for them. So he's given up these rights. Is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? The others are going there, and the people are really generous, like people still are, and they're collecting bits of money, and they're saying, oh no, and maybe they were wise, maybe Paul wasn't, I'm not taking sides on it, but people are supporting the person that's there as a missionary, as you would and do, and as I would too. So, but the others are taking that for granted and accepting it, and rightly so. But Paul hasn't. So why hasn't he? Just come back to our just reading from the Bible text now. He goes on to give some examples. Firstly, he looks at other professions which don't have to earn their living. Who at any time pays the expenses for doing military service? If the army's called you up, well, someone's got to feed you. You can't be a farmer and fighting out in the middle of somewhere a military campaign, and people know that, so somebody has to put the money in to give food to soldiers. Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat any of its fruit? And Paul's, in brackets, I've planted you, but I'm not eating the fruit from it. Who tends the flock and doesn't get any of its milk? Then he starts to look at Scripture. Do I say this on human authority? Doesn't the law, the Torah, also say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain. Well, that's practical and a law, okay, and it's about what it says, but it becomes a metaphor. Here's Paul doing the hard work of missionary life. Well, should he have something covering his mouth, or should he be able to eat while he works? Is it for oxen that God is concerned? He says no. Or does he not speak entirely for our sake? It was indeed written for our sake, for whoever ploughs should plough in hope, and whoever threshes should thresh in hope of a share in the crop. If we have sown spiritual good among you, is it too much if we reap your material benefits? The logic's all right, and I don't need to explain it. So, but that's a right Paul has, but he hasn't taken it. So, in other words, if you have a right to go to the temple and a right to eat this meat because of what you know, that doesn't mean you have to carry it out. It may be all right to, but you don't have to. You have to look deeper and see what love asks of you. If others share this rightful claim on you, do not we still more? There are other missionaries there, perhaps some of the people Paul has trained, who are being supported by the community, and he's just appealing to that. Nevertheless, here's the point, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. So it's a missionary tactic that Paul has espoused absolutely thoroughly, to the amazement of everybody. We got a bit of a hint why, because there were so many people going around on their soapboxes in the agora in the city, attracting people for money and telling them what they wanted to hear and all that kind of thing and amusing them and all that. Paul wanted to be so free of that that he just refused any money, any support, so no one could ever say he did it for any other motive than love and than his desire to. No one could point that finger at him. He was terribly sensitive on this issue, perhaps oversensitive. We're not here to judge him, but we know that's what his principle was, and that's his basic reason. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple? And he's there in the temple service. And those who serve at the altar share in what is sacrificed on the altar. Book of Numbers, chapter 18, verse 31, if you needed a reference, but it's all there. In the same way, now, very rarely he quotes Jesus, but here's one where he does. The Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. Luke chapter 10, verse 7. So here he is. It's the second time in this letter he's quoted Jesus. One was on divorce. Now here it is again. What did I say? 10:7, didn't I? Luke 10:7. Yes, talk of the missionary speech. Remain in the same house, eating and drinking, says Jesus, whatever they provide, for the labourer deserves his hire, deserves to be paid. So this was something that Jesus had said, the apostles told him, they were doing it, it was the normal thing, but Paul's reminding the Corinthians that he never ever did it. I have made no use of any of these rights. Here we get a text that I've got an opinion on it that I've never seen anywhere. That doesn't mean it's wrong, but it certainly doesn't mean you want to put a lot of confidence in it either. I've seen scholars struggle with this little bit I put here, but I actually think there's a very simple solution which I'll offer you as a suggestion. Here's the text. I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing this so that they may be applied in my case. He's not reminding them so they'll say, oh yes, we've forgotten Paul, haven't we looked after him, then send him a donation. He doesn't want that. I would rather die than that. Now, No one will deprive me of my ground for boasting. I haven't seen anywhere where anyone has suggested that that was a statement being made by people in Corinth. I think it is, for reasons I'll explain in a moment. I think that's what they're accusing him of. I think they're saying, you aren't receiving, some of them, who don't like Paul or are taking other points of view, and there's plenty of those in Corinth, you didn't take any money so that you could boast of it. I don't take money. That's why you did, he says. And that's what they're accusing me of, that this was, he was holding it as a boast. And then he says, look, this is his answer to that accusation, I suggest. Verse 16, if I proclaim the gospel, this gives me no grounds for boasting. I'm not boasting. This is the gospel I want to give you, the gospel of love. He's already said in chapter 1, verse 31 of the same letter, let one who boasts boast in the Lord, not in the fact that he doesn't accept money or is independent or anything like that, or is better than the other apostles because they accept money and he doesn't. He's not going on with any of that. Here's chapter 4, verse 7. What do you have that you didn't receive? And if you received it, why do you boast of it as though it were not a gift? He's already said that to them. So he's not going to be boasting of something that he does. You following my logic? So I'm suggesting that, those words there ought to be put in inverted commas as an accusation being made against Paul by a small group in Corinth. So an obligation is laid on me, and woe to me if I don't proclaim the gospel. He's got to do it. It's burning thing inside him, and he does it, and he doesn't do it for anything, for reward. He just can't not do it. 17. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. If not of my own will, I am entrusted with a commission. The Greek word for commission here is oikonomia. We get our word economy from it. Oikonomia. Oikos is house in Greek. Nomos is law. Oikos nomos is the law of the house, the management of the house, the customs that keep the whole system going. So he's got a responsibility in the body of Christ. That's why he's doing it. And he's doing it to keep the right order in this community of love, which is the Christian community. Here's Jesus saying much the same thing. Do you thank the slave for doing what was commanded? This is Luke 17 again, same chapter we quoted from earlier. And it's good to keep thinking, why did Luke write chapter 17 the way he did? Was he there when Paul wrote the Corinthians? Why not? Did Paul and Luke discuss this, and Luke put it in his gospel in that place, and Paul puts it here? I mean, this is all real stuff going on here. We can't prove any of that, but it's highly likely that they're interacting. Do you think thank the slave for doing what was commanded? So you also, when you've done all that you were ordered to do, say, we are worthless slaves. We've done only what we ought to have done. And he concludes this little section here, chapter 9 and verse 18. What then is my reward? It's not money. It's not food. It's not being feted. It's not whatever. It's just this, that in my proclaiming I may make the gospel free of charge. He doesn't want it to be any price that anybody pays except accepting the love of Jesus. I may make the gospel free of charge so as not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. Now that's a pretty long section, but I hope I've shown you why he puts it in there. Because he's actually, using an example, he wants to get back to this group in Corinth who have rights. He's not denying it, but he's saying, don't insist on them if it means hurting one of your fellow brothers and sisters. Be sensitive to their conscience. Be aware of love. Knowledge is not the first thing, it's love. And be very careful, because Christ died for them, and you're hurting Christ if you